It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And as we talk, it is the MLB draft tonight, but unlike some years, I don't think there is anybody who we can expect to get some saves or anything this year, so we will move on to actual baseball and a guy who was a very high pick just a few years ago, Jameson Taillon. One of those guys who had the performance and the scouting reports, and by all accounts should be very good very quick. Fred, he is probably gone in most leagues, but how much do you like him going from now to the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what his role is going to be. At least I haven't seen that going forward, so that puts a little bit of a damper on it. But I definitely like him. I just think that the pitching for the Pirates is an advantageous situation for him in the sense that they're one of the better teams in the National League, solid home park for him to pitch in. You know, I think this is a good fit. I think he should be owned in all leagues. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And to go back to a topic that you and I have talked about a few times in the past, there are some organizations you trust more with young pitchers. There are some organizations you trust more or less with young hitters. I think it's fair to say at this point that the Pirates are not only an organization we trust to turn around veteran pitchers, but I think I'm pretty optimistic about what they're going to do with a young starter like this. I don't think they're going to mess him up.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And, we certainly want to give them the benefit of the doubt on that. I'm kind of encouraged, actually, from a fantasy perspective, that his first start wasn't awesome, because maybe that means there's still a window for some owners in shallow leagues to pick him up, or for owners who want to trade for him, maybe to go to the, you know, to his owner and say, oh, he didn't look so great in his first start, you know, maybe you want to give him to me. Yeah, as I said, I don't know exactly what the Pirates are going to do, but it seems to me that putting Juan Nicasio in the bullpen soon, if not now, you know, is a probably a good option.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I thought, I started really liking Nicasio as a reliever, I guess last year, maybe 2 years ago. It just seems like such a better fit for a guy with his skill set. I know people got excited about him in the spring, but ultimately he's still primarily a two-pitch pitcher, and that's going to play a lot better in the bullpen than it is in the rotation. Another very hot prospect, a guy who's actually sort of easing into post-type sleeper at this point, but has pitched really well here lately. Archie Bradley is pretty exciting for what he's done recently, but it's still a pretty short stretch. And he's a guy who's kind of been up and down. I think I'm on board now. Are you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he did take a bit of a step back last night. You know, he gave up 4 runs and 5 2/3 against the Rays. But, I mean, overall, since he's been back, he's looked really good, and the strikeout rate's good. And, I still worry a little bit about the walks, but I'm on board enough. I think I would want to own him in a 10-team league, even if he's on my bench for now, just because he probably has more upside than another pitcher I could put on my bench. And then in a 12-team league or deeper, I'd say I'd be pretty comfortable putting him in my lineup for most matchups. You know, while we see where it goes. There's definitely a wide range of outcomes for him because his AAA numbers this year are great. His talent's really good, but he's had some real clunkers in the majors.
Yeah, it's one of those where, well, for one thing, Arizona is not quite Coors Field. It's not that kind of, but it's not far, and he's the kind of guy where you start wondering, do you start picking matchups? If you have him, do you pick and choose, and do you find when he is on the road but not in Denver, that kind of thing? He did have a rough start in Denver, but, you know, and even that wasn't that bad. I just kind of wonder, is he a guy where maybe you kind of get cute with him?
Yeah, no, that's possible, and if you look at the 3 starts since he's been back, start at home, gave up a homer, start on the road, didn't. Started home, gave up 2 homers. So, you know, that, you know, it's too early to say that's a real trend, but it fits with the park.
Right, that's the thing. It passes the sniff test. In the other direction, James Shields goes from San Diego and a very friendly park to Chicago, the American League, a less friendly park. And what do you know? He gets knocked around. He was pretty good in San Diego this year, but not great. He was fine. He was sort of fine the year before that, but he gave up 33 home runs last year, 9 in 67 innings in San Diego this year, 3 in his debut. I'm not sure I even want James Shields as anything more than an occasional streaming option in good matchups. Do you like him any more than that?
No, not at all. I'm really scared of this one. And, you know, if I could trade him for R.G. Bradley, I would. Like, I think if I was a Shields owner and I could get any play, what I'm saying is, I guess if I was a Shields owner, if I could get anyone who would kind of intrigue me on my roster instead of him, I would make the switch. I just, you know, yeah, his last two starts, one with the Padres and one with the White Sox, been really disastrous. No strikeouts, well, hardly any strikeouts, you know, home runs given up, couldn't get deep into the game at all. And I don't know, I don't feel like this was a great fit for Chicago, and I felt like it was a bit of a desperation move for them. Like, they kind of raced out, got the idea they were contenders, had come back, you know, and this was their chance to maybe make like an early first move on the trade market. But I just don't like the fit with him with the home run troubles going to a hitter friendly park in the AL.
Yeah, that's, it's the thing. It's he was pretty good with his surface numbers, but no more than pretty good with all of the advantages, and now he doesn't have all of the advantages. So it's kind of a scary thing. We move on. A couple of guys that were very exciting at the beginning of the year, scuffling a little bit. Marcus Stroman, I'm not that worried. A couple of these, and one of the rough starts was against the Red Sox. For the most part, until his last time out, he wasn't walking a lot of guys. He's given up some runs, but I'm not really that worried. I am a little worried about Drew Smyly. Also, I think we are a little less confident of what Smyly would be this year anyway. Where do you kind of stand on those two guys?
Yeah, to me, although they're both struggling, they're all almost polar opposites, where I agree I'm not really worried about Stroman. I think he's had three bad starts in his last four outings, but two of those starts, the last two, were both against Boston. And, you know, maybe he's just, Boston's really good, and maybe he just kind of has a thing with them that he's going to have to work through. We've seen that before with certain pitchers in certain matchups. So, you know, I'm not really worried about him. That being said, the upside with Stroman, when he struggles, you really start to wonder what the upside is, because strikeout rate's really low. So, like, one of the lowest of a starter who would be used in a mixed league. So, I mean, he has to be giving you helpful ratios. Otherwise, you're pretty much just getting him for wins. And the Blue Jays lineup hasn't been as productive as expected this year, and their bullpen hasn't been as good as expected. So who knows how the wins will go. Smyly, to me, is the opposite, where, like, he was lights out in April, hasn't looked so good in his last four or five starts. But with his high strikeout rate, I think I looked about 2 days ago, and I think he was still 15th in the majors in strikeouts. Like, he's someone, if he gets back on track, can start giving you a string of, you know, six-inning, two-run, eight-strikeout starts, and he's really exciting to me.
Yeah, I just, you know, they haven't said anything about a health issue, but they're skipping a start, and when it goes that wrong, I can't help but worry, particularly a guy who has had some health issues, I can't help but worry if he's maybe not completely sound.
Yeah, I mean, of all people in fantasy baseball, he's probably the next, say, week or 2 weeks for Drew Smyly is probably as big as it is for anyone. I mean, if he comes out in his next couple starts and has those six-inning, two-run starts, then you can say, okay, well, you know, maybe he was just, you know, had some things to work through and they gave him a break and now he's fine. And if he doesn't, then, you know, then the bottom really falls out with him. So, I mean, I think he's an interesting buy-low option right now because I think the price in some of these could be really low.
I think that's fair. I need to see him stop giving up home runs, particularly, you know, a couple of those starts have been, or at least two of those starts have been in friendly places, but a lot of those home runs at Seattle, at home, Minnesota, and the ball still flying out of the yard, that's a little scary. We move on to back to the young end. Michael Fulmer, we talked about when he got called up. He's been really, really good. How intrigued are you by Fulmer right now?
Yeah, definitely intrigued. I mean, he looked great against Toronto earlier this week, and that's, you know, three starts in a row without giving up a run. I mean, go back four starts, he gave up one run, and, you know, he's getting deep into those games. He's really, like, everything's really going his way right now. I mean, long term, I could worry a little bit about an innings limit later in the season, especially if the Tigers aren't really in the race, but I mean, from him, like, who cares? Like, we worry about innings limits with guys like Jose Fernandez. We don't worry about them with Michael Fulmer, who you found on waivers. So you just enjoy the run now for a couple months. But, you know, I mean, he's not going to keep throwing shutouts, but I think he's someone that can probably stick in a mixed league rotation the way he's pitching right now.
One last starter and one last exciting young starter. Julio Urias, his last time out, had a very nice line. It was only four innings, but seven strikeouts, one walk, no home runs.
He walked four in his first start. He gave up three homers in his second start, and neither of those was a problem in the third start. I would note that those were at the Mets, at the Cubs, and at home against the Rockies. So there's a little bit of a trend there. Certainly it certainly makes sense that he would have been better in the third start. But I like what I see in that last start. What do you see overall? It's kind of a hard to make a lot of three starts, but what do you like from what you've seen from Arias overall?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see him coming around now, and you know, and that was, as you said, that was his first home start, so that's encouraging. My concern is how many pitches he's throwing. Like, he threw 86 in four innings, and they took him out, and he was doing quite well. And it takes a lot of pitches maybe to strike out all those batters. So I worry about him maybe being anything more than a five-inning starter right now, and it's often hard to get wins as a five-inning starter. So that's kind of my concern with him. Like, so say Tyone just came up. Like, if you found out Tyone was sticking in the rotation, which of the two youngsters would you rather own?
I think I'd rather have Tyone. I think that for a few different reasons, I do think he's a little safer in the short term. He's sort of been doing this for longer. I mean, I realize it's still the minors, but I feel like you've got a little more of a record of being confident in him. And the other thing is, you know, if we're splitting hairs and we're talking about the course of the season, we don't know what either of their roles is, but I think we're more confident that if Tyone pitches well, they both pitch well, and they both pitch well enough to stay in the rotation. I think Tyone gets more starts and more innings this year than Arias does.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Another way I wanted to look at Arias is, you know, if he has one other solid start, let's say his next start's five innings, two runs or something, a five inning, one run or something like that, would you try to get out there and sell high on him quickly and pick up a struggling guy like a Drew Smyly, you know, who has maybe more potential because he's not going to be on such a limited pitch count and innings count?
Yeah, I think if I have Arias and I can cash that in for a real asset, not nothing, I'm not looking to get rid of him, but if I can cash him in at some point soon and take advantage of, not take advantage, but get out before that what we believe to be a pretty low innings cap starts coming into play, then yes, I would definitely be intrigued by an idea like that.
Yeah, because I don't think you'll look back in August or September and say, oh, Arias has put together like this string of like six-inning, one-run starts that I missed out on because I trade him. Like, if you trade him, you know, you might miss out on some nice five-inning, six-strikeout starts, but I just don't think you're going to miss out on such an I don't think he's ever going to do, for example, this season what Fulmer's done in the last few weeks.
And again, I think the other thing is, even if he does, I don't think he's going to do it for long. I just think that you just talked about innings cap. You talk about with a guy like Jose Fernandez, you worry. And Arias, even if he does reach that ceiling soon, I just suspect that cap is really soon. I just don't think this guy's going to get a lot of starts and could even be in the bullpen when guys start coming back. I just don't think he is this week. I like him. Over the course of the remainder of this season, I only kind of like him because I don't know. If he only gives you 80 more innings this year, I don't think that'll be shocking.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the hype's probably, I'd love to, if I was an Arias owner, I'd love to see him have that one good start. I think he's pitching on Sunday night baseball this week, and I'd love to see him have a really nice start there. And when I say for him a really nice start, it'd be five shutout innings or something like that. And then I'd hit the trade market right away and see what I could get for him.
We move over to the offensive side, another of the very tip-top prospects in baseball. Guy we've talked about quite a bit, but there are starting to be some encouraging signs from Byron Buxton. He's probably available in your shallower leagues at this point. One more time, are you picking him up?
I'm still going to stick with my kind of company line on this one for me, that I need to see him hitting high in the lineup before I want him in a 10-team league. In a 12, I'd put him on my bench. In a 15, I'd start him. In a 10, I just need to see him. Like, Eduardo Nunez really hitting well up high in the lineup for them. Like, I need to see Buxton hit well. I could see a scenario where he does hit high in the lineup later this season with the Twins not being competitive. But as long as he's hitting near the bottom of the lineup, I just can't get that excited in that offense.
Yeah, I would say one of the things that I like that I've seen from him since his time back is a little bit of pop, because I think that's one of the things that we hoped he would have that he hasn't shown. He's got three extra base hits and 30 at-bats since coming back. That's one thing that is a little encouraging. But, I mean, I think it's a fair point. He's hitting for average, but he's not hitting for a lot of power. He's not driving in runs. And so he's probably not going to be a guy who's going to be a power guy in the short term. So, yeah, if he's not getting those opportunities, I think that's a fair point. We move on down the line. Johnny Peralta activated, and we weren't sure what to do with that whole Cardinals infield situation. It's shaken down in a way that I don't think anybody expected. And so, first of all, if Peralta's out there, you're picking him up, right?
Yeah, I'd say I'm picking him up in most leagues. Like, I'm not expecting a top 5 or 6 shortstop the rest of the way, but I'd say top 10, top 12 at worst. Like, you know, I'd say the rest of the way he can probably hit about a dozen home runs and, you know, a respectable batting average. Like, he kind of is what he is, and I don't think he even touches that top 6 group. But I feel like that there's probably an owner in every 12-team league and maybe even in most 10-team leagues who has a shortstop who isn't doing well and could use Peralta.
And then we kind of want to break down a little more of where this goes. Colton Wong gets sent down. Matt Carpenter moves to second base. But I think the most interesting thing is something we had talked about, and we talked about this with Trevor Story. We now talk about it with Aledmys Diaz. These worries about guys losing their job if they're playing well rarely are well-founded worries, because Major League teams like to win, and if a guy's playing really well, they'll find a place for him. Diaz appears to have a secure job. How much does that change your assessment of him for the remainder of the year if, as it appears, he is the Cardinals shortstop, full stop?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly boosts his value, and it makes me – I mean, he's good. He's owned in most leagues, so now, you know, you can start to think of him as someone who you can leave in your lineup the rest of the way. I felt like during May, you know, Diaz owners had to be thinking, okay, now what am I going to do in June? Like, if he goes to the bench or whatever, they just are a part-time role. You know, now I think you can maybe feel secure with him. So if you've been using him and you have another middle infielder, you're kind of waiting in the wings for when you needed to use him, now you can maybe go out and make a trade for another position.
Is Diaz a sell-high guy for you?
Yeah, probably a little bit. He might be the guy that I would try to trade now if I was a Diaz owner. Like I said, and I had already covered myself with someone on my bench. Maybe I had Peralta on my DL slot, but I had some plan, assuming that he wasn't going to be the starting shortstop. You know, now I think, yeah, you could hit the trade market and say to other owners, like, hey, this guy has good numbers this season, and they've cleared space for him. He could keep it up. And he certainly could keep it up, but he's probably the sell-high guy out of my middle infield.
I would agree. I'm just – maybe he does. I did a radio hit in St. Louis last week, and they were talking about could we be talking about him with the elite shortstops in the game? Could we be talking about him with Bogarts, with Lindor? I just don't see that. I don't see him as that kind of guy. I think he's productive. I think he's a useful player. But I also see him as a guy who's not going to continue doing this. And if I could get real value for him, especially now that somebody doesn't have that worry that he is going to lose his job imminently, I would probably be all over that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Logan Morrison is a guy I tweeted something like 3 years ago, one of the points when Logan Morrison was bouncing around from one place to another, that it's basically written in stone this year. Now, this was 2 or 3 years ago, that Logan Morrison's going to go to the Rays and hit 290, 380, 450. And I was off by a couple of years, but it just makes so much sense. They tend to find guys like this, and it tends to work. With that said, it's 3 years down the road, and I am way less confident in Logan Morrison. The way you wrote it in our notes was, did he already miss the best of it? I kind of suspect you did. I'm not really getting on board here. If you need something, I don't hate it, but do you like Morrison at all, or do you kind of figure we've seen the hot streak, and if you didn't get it, then don't bother?
Yeah, I would say if you're a Prince Fielder owner, and you just don't want to use Prince anymore, and you're looking for someone to cover you for the next couple of weeks while you figure something else out, then Morrison, I think, is the guy to pick up. Like, he's hitting well right now. As you said, it's not completely shocking. And he has had stretches before, and he hit 17 homers last season. So, I mean, this isn't completely out of nowhere. That being said, he tends to go up and down. Like, he has 7 homers so far this year, most of which have come in, like, the last 3 weeks. Is he going to hit 15? Matthew, do you think he'll hit 15 more home runs this season?
I would take the under on that.
Yeah, so I mean, that means he's not someone who you put into your corner infield slot this week and say, oh, I found someone on waivers who's, you know, going to solve my problems for the rest of the year. That being said, maybe you could use him for a couple more weeks, get a couple more homers out of him. But if I was putting him in my lineup, I'd be also looking around at what I could do probably for a long-term solution. And he also, in a deep league, could be a sell-high guy right now, and maybe there's an owner in your league who's you know, really low in the home run category and is willing to take a shot that he does hit 15 or 17 home runs the rest of the way, because I would also take the under on it.
And because you're a pro, you teed up our next topic. Jurickson Profar is absolutely raking. He was not that long ago one of the best prospects in the game. He was MLB.com's number one prospect going into the 2013 season. Been a lot since then, but he is crushing the ball, and he is playing some first base, among other things. He's really kind of playing all over the place. I'm kind of intrigued, especially if, as it appears, he may become eligible before terribly long at a variety of positions. Adrian Beltre is missing some time. Wouldn't shock me to see him there. Are you in on Profar?
Yeah, definitely. It took me a little while to come around on the idea just because he doesn't have a place to play. But I've come way around now just because when I look at that Rangers roster, I can totally see how if they want him at the top of the lineup, and I never liked Odor at the top of the lineup because he doesn't draw walks, if they want Profar at the top of the lineup, not that Profar has been drawing walks since he got here, but like it's easy to see how they can do that. There's so many options against left-handers. They have so many players in their lineup who are better against righties, so it's easy to get him in the lineup against left-handers. And then against righties, you just kind of mix and match. I mean, he can play in the outfield. Mazzara gets a day. Chu gets a day when he gets back later this week, like once a week. You know, he can take a day from Odor once a week, you know, and then Moreland has really struggled. He can take a couple days from him a week, a couple days from Fielder. It's easy to see how he can get six starts a week at any three or four positions. And as a fantasy owner, you don't really care where he's getting the starts as long as he's getting them.
And I think the thing is the Rangers have shown themselves to be the kind of organization that is willing to do that. They are not going to say, well, he's a second baseman, and so he plays at second base. They're going to say, we want to play this guy. We want to find a way to get him in. And if there's somebody not producing, that person's going to sit. I think that the Rangers have shown themselves to be a club where if you play and you play well, you're going to play. And so I think, again, this is one of those things where if he continues to produce, they'll find ways to get him in the lineup.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, and they're in it to win it this year. And, you know, and Moreland is one real, I think, target for to give up playing time in the sense of, Moreland's a veteran, like there's not a lot of upside there, and he's a piece of the Rangers, but he's not one of their core players, like who they have invested in, like they have Fielder or something where they need to get him to come around. If I was going to throw a little bit of cold water on Profar, I would say that when I look at his minor league numbers, and we talked about Mazzara about this a little bit at the beginning of the year, and we were a little off on him, but with Profar, I can't pinpoint exactly what he's going to give you as far as homers or steals that's going to make him super valuable. Like, I believe he can hit for average. If he hits leadoff, he can score runs. But, is he going to get 10 homers and 10 steals the rest of the way, which is fine, but it's not, like, really, really impactful. Where do you see him?
I don't know, though. So 10 and 10 the rest of the way, and he's eligible middle infield. A second baseman who even hits 280, a second baseman who's 280, 15, and 15 over a full season with a lot of runs, that's a pretty valuable player.
Yeah, for sure. He's a guy in your lineup. So 10-10 the rest of the way would be kind of the equivalent of being like a 14-14 guy or 15-15 guy over a full season. Totally usable in a mixed league, you know, for sure, as your middle infielder, and you love the multi-position eligibility. I can't figure out exactly, unless he hits for more power than I thought, or unless he hits for like 320. That's, I think, maybe the way that he's like a really, really big impact player the rest of the way, maybe is if the batting average is really high, and then that would spur him to score a lot of runs. So maybe that's the way that he's like a, you know what I mean? Like not just
yeah,
a part of your roster, but one of your top seven or eight hitters the rest of the way.
Yeah, and I understand that. I just think, for me, there's a big difference. There's one really big difference in having this conversation about Mazzara and having this conversation about Profar in that position, because the threshold to be a guy who really helps you at second base is different from a guy who really helps you at outfield. So I feel like for an outfielder, I need to know what's this guy going to do specifically that's special. I'm much more okay with a middle infielder who I can just say, you know what, he's going to help me in a lot of different ways. That's a guy that's going to help me win.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, he's going to have, maybe by the All-Star break, he'll probably have position eligibility at three or four positions.
Yep.
I mean, like that's really valuable to get that guy, whether he's in your middle infield or whether he's in your utility slot. But just as injuries happen, as teams have five-game weeks, as guys have just really rough pitching matchups some weeks, to just say, well, I can play Profar basically anywhere in my lineup, and I can pick out the rest of my hitters around him.
Right. One last offensive player before we move on to our next category, and that is Billy Hamilton. I am almost a professional Billy Hamilton skeptic, but he's been hitting pretty well lately. I still am not convinced it's more than a flicker. What do you think? Is this a step forward, or is this just sometimes you run into some hits?
Yeah, I think we've been down this road with him, and I have a hard time getting excited too, especially because like most of his effective games recently came at Coors Field. So, I mean, you know, the Rockies and the Reds hooked up, and we knew that was going to be just kind of one shootout after another, and he did his part and, you know, had a bunch of hits in that series. Now, he has had a couple of games in a row here against the Cardinals, so, like, full credit for that. I'm not totally on board. He is hitting .269 this season, which for him is a really good average. I don't know. I feel like I trade for Hamilton if I'm at the bottom of my league in steals, and I'm desperate. Like, it is the one time where I could consider trading for him and just hoping that the rest of the way he steals 38 bases or something the rest of the season and, like, makes a huge impact, because there really aren't other players that can do that. But I'm not expecting it.
And the problem there is that anybody who's held on to Hamilton this far probably isn't going to give him away for nothing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they finally seen the best of him here. And, you know, the way I see Hamilton as far as value goes right now is, you know, he does have 16 steals, so maybe the owner who has him is doing well in the steals category if they have a VR on their roster or something like that. You know, and maybe you can get Hamilton from them for a power hitter. If the steals, he is one of the very, very few guys in baseball that can turn the steals category, because there just aren't that many guys that are really running often right now.
And I'm going to apologize here. I lied. One more hitter before we move on, and I double apologize because it's not a guy on our sheet. But I have put Justin Upton back in my starting lineup. Justin Upton, over the last week, basically since the turn of June, is hitting .286 and has hit for some power. You go back about 4 weeks, it's .265. He is back to where he's not killing you. And with a guy like that, my feeling is if he's not killing you, he's got to be in your lineup, because you never know when he's going to do something really exciting. Are you more confident? Are you less worried about Upton than you were a couple of weeks ago?
A little bit. The strikeouts are down a little. Like, he's striking a little less often. He hasn't had a 2-strikeout game since May 29th. So that's, for the way he was going, like, that's a big improvement for him. I agree with you that he should go in your lineup, because when you have those high upside players like Upton, as you said, you only take them out of your lineup if they're just killing you. I would take a Prince Fielder out of my lineup. But Upton, because he's still just killing you. But once Upton gets to the point where he's had a couple multi-hit games, then he goes back in your lineup. I feel like maybe there's still a buy-low window on Upton. I mean, his season numbers are really poor. And I know he's had a couple of good games, but I think there is still maybe a buy-low window there if an owner wants to. Would you want to buy low on Upton right now?
Well, I'm going to turn that around, because, again, I have him, and I would like to, but now that we've got really a stretch here where he's been pretty decent, I'm hesitating to sell low. I'm not selling him for pennies. I would have a hard time finding a deal that made sense, I think, for Upton right now, because I'm not going to ask full value, but I'm probably going to ask more than somebody's willing to buy if they're trying to do a buy low at this point. I think he's in this weird middle ground where it's probably going to be tough to make a deal that makes sense for both parties.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an Upton owner, I guess I could throw out some scenarios, you know, just within his own team. Like, would you trade him for Ian Kinsler? Would you trade him for Victor Martinez? Those are all guys who went way later than him in your draft. Would you make that trade?
Kinsler would be a really intriguing name, just because, again, of position, but it would be tough. That's probably a guy that I would be intrigued by. That's the kind of name where a guy who's been very good in the past, the position has value, that's a guy I'd be intrigued by. But then you start coming down to fit. Then you start coming down to questions of what makes sense for your particular roster.
Yeah, for sure. And when you think about Kinsler and Upton, who has the highest ceiling the rest of the way? Well, that's Upton. If you're an Upton owner, you've already dealt with this really poor performance. If that really poor performance has sunk you in the standings, like, who's the guy who's going to bring you back up to the top? And it's Upton. So I guess the time where you sell low on Upton is if somehow you own Upton and your team around him has been successful enough that, you know, even with him killing you, you're still in the top three teams. Maybe now you look to get out for a Kinsler type and get that solid production the rest of the way. Other than that, but I don't know if I could buy low on him. I wouldn't trade Ian Kinsler for him, I don't think, right now. But I would trade someone like Martinez, who is a little more, to me, a little more blah.
We move on to some bullpen talk, and the Astros situation, I think, is a little confusing. I'm not dropping Gregerson yet. I'm not sure what I think it's going to look like in a month. What do you see when you look at that ninth inning situation in Houston?
Yeah, I agree. I've recommended to not drop Gregerson yet. That being said, I really like to own Will Harris right now. I've looked at Giles, and I've thought about Giles, and, you know, because he was supposed to be the guy, but, you know, I looked at, you know, Harris got the save on Sunday, and then on Monday, they went to Giles in a tie game on the road, which suggests to me that maybe they were saving Harris for a save situation if it came up, and Giles gave up the winning run in that game, and a save situation never came about. So it's almost to me like, at least on a short-term basis, a little bit of a two strikes against Giles, in the sense of they weren't going to use him as a closer in that game, and he didn't let them get to the closer. So I don't know. I know Harris isn't exciting like Giles, but he just, since the start of last season, he's pitched so well, and their bullpen's been so inconsistent lately. Isn't he just, if you're the manager looking around, like, isn't he maybe the guy to settle it?
I see virtually no way that it's Giles in the short term. He hadn't been any better lately. I mean, you look at his recent games, you go back, you know, just the last couple of weeks, 10 hits, 4 runs, and 6 and 2/3 innings. I mean, 9 strikeouts and 2 walks, and that's good. But I think we all know, again, when these decisions become actual decisions that actual human beings are making, they're not generally going to look and say, you know what, I like the strikeout and walk rate. We're going to make that guy our closer. We're going to look at the other guy and say, he's not giving up runs. We're going to make him our closer. So, yeah, absolutely. I think that it's really hard for me to see Giles getting the job right now. The one thing, and this is something we've talked about, is that when you get thrust into that role, you better be good. You better get it done a few times. And if you get it done a few times, they start believing in you. But I think that there's still the chance that Giles gets hot, Harris fumbles it, and the next time in a month that it's Giles. But right now I see very little likelihood that it's him.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to just kind of trust what Harris has been doing. I totally agree with you. He needs to string together 4 or 5, you know, nice, clean saves in a row. And then he could put it away. And the Astros are a team that has started the season really poorly, and they have climbed back to be, like, kind of on the outside, but a little bit in the race now, to the point where they say, you know, if we have a really nice, like, 8-2, 9-1 stretch, like, we're going to be, you know, 500 or better. We're going to be right back in the race. So they don't have – but that streak needs to come, you know, fairly soon. Like, they don't have the time to deal with a lot of blown saves. And to me, that's why I think Harris for them is just the safe option to use right now while they kind of sort everything out. And we've seen guys before who don't seem like the most likely candidate in their own bullpen at times, but they just pitch well and they get a chance and they hold the job.
Absolutely, and the best way to hold the job is to be good for your first week, basically. We moved to injuries, and we talked about Michael Brantley going all the way back to the spring. I worried all along. I worried about a hitter's shoulder, and at this point, I'm not going to drop him if I don't need to. If I have a DL slot and I'm not using it for someone else, but that's about the only circumstance in which Michael Brantley is still on my roster, is I have DL slots. I don't need them. There's nobody else I would put in over him. Are you any more optimistic about him than I am this year?
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I wouldn't rush out to drop him if I had the DL space or anything. Like, I wouldn't say, oh, I'm never going to get anything from Brantley this year. I just might as well get rid of him and put anyone else in my DL slot. But, yeah, if I needed the DL slot for, you know, players who would be back in a couple of weeks or in a month, then I would feel comfortable dropping Brantley, and I think he's, when he's healthy, one of the best hitters in baseball, but I just don't know if that'll happen at all this year, or maybe it'll happen, but it'll be in September, and by then, you know, who knows where your fantasy team will be at.
And again, the thing with Brantley, to me, for this year, and I like to think that next year he'll be fine, he'll get a full winter, he'll be okay, but
my worry with him is still the same as it's been all along, that even if he comes back, I just don't know what you're going to get. This is not something where – this is not a broken bone in the leg where you figure it heals, he rehabs, he comes back, he's good. This is something where I'm not at all confident what he's going to be if he does come back this year.
Yeah, definitely. And this is someone who needs all of his plate skills to be a really viable, like a top-end fantasy player. Like he needs to hit for average, and his power is borderline. So he needs all the strengths he's got, you know, to hit enough home runs to really be a big difference maker. You're right. If he comes back later in the season, and it's pretty late in the season, and after he comes back he hits 270 with a few homers, but not that many, and he steals a couple bases, and, you know, I don't know. It just isn't that impressive. I guess if I was going to give him one kind of vote of confidence, is the Indians are doing really well this year in the standings, so there is a chance that, you know, when he's ready, you know, if he gets ready at this point this year, that they could keep him in the lineup every day. Like, this isn't an also-ran team where if he comes back later in the year, they're going to say, well, let's just play him three times a week anyways and just save him for next season. Right. If he is ready to go at some point, they will be using him.
Yeah. The worry with Vince Velasquez all along was durability and health. It was an issue really when the trade happened, when he went to Philadelphia over the winter. He comes out of his most recent start with bicep soreness. Look, I'm hesitant to read too much into anything. I do think that's a little less scary. A lot of times when you hear triceps, you hear that often turns into elbow. Maybe it really is just a sore muscle, but I think it really re-raises some of the yellow flags with Velasquez, where there was always worry about his health and his durability. I'm not selling, but I'm sure not buying at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, I don't know, maybe he won't go on the DL, but it, like, he only threw a couple pitches and they took him out of the game, and once pitchers go on the DL, it's usually a fairly long road back. They're not like hitters, usually, where they're just out for a couple weeks. It happens sometimes. Sonny Gray was out for a couple weeks, but, I mean, if he's out, I mean, it's probably shut down for a little while, then ramp it back up, then rehab starter two. You know, the whole process takes a little while. Going way back to earlier in the podcast, would you trade Julio Urías right now for Velasquez and buy low and hope that he's okay in a couple of weeks or even in a week?
I don't think I would trade anything for Velasquez. I think I would pick him up for a DL slot if somebody dropped him. But here's the thing, and I'm excited about him. I think he's an exciting pitcher. But the thing is, I know the Phillies are kind of technically on the fringes of contention right now, but they are not going to do anything to risk this guy's long-term, to risk the franchise long-term, to risk the rebuild in order to get an extra three starts out of Vince Velasquez in 2016. They are going to be exceedingly careful with this guy. And so it's just it's a matter of they are absolutely going to err on the side of giving him all the time he needs. So even if I think he's going to be fine, I have to see it, and I have to see him pitching before I give up any asset of any value to pick him up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We move on to the two-start pitchers, and it is some guys we've talked about this week. Julio Urías at Phoenix, which is a tough place to pitch, but home against Milwaukee. Jared Weaver, Ricky Nolasco, Chase Anderson, Jared Eichhoff, Nate Eovaldi, and Wade Miley. There's not a lot that I like in here. I like Eovaldi all right. I like Eichhoff, the pitcher, but I sure don't like at Toronto. Maybe Miley, but the second one is at Boston. Is there anybody in here that you like for two starts this week?
Yeah, I'd go Chase Anderson. I mean, he's pitched well recently. You're probably, out of the two starts, only going to get about 11 innings out of him. But, I mean, and I know the Giants and the Dodgers aren't easy matchups, but at least they're pitcher-friendly parks. So, I mean, in a 10-team league, I don't know if there's anyone there. Maybe Urías. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I think he's even more 12-team league because the Diamondbacks, like him on the road against Diamondbacks is tricky. Anderson, I don't mind. I don't think he'll kill you. I think 11 innings, maybe he gets a win. Probably say 9 strikeouts or something like that. Like, that's still probably better than the last one start pitcher option that you have on your team. I'm not totally against Eichhoff either. I kind of like Eichhoff as a pitcher. The Blue Jays haven't been really productive this year. Like, they're pretty much just a league average offense. I know they have more than league average names, but there's pretty much just a league average offense, and then he goes home to face the Diamondbacks. Like, I don't mind. I say him and Anderson in 12-team leagues.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think, you know, I think a point that you've made before, that's an offense that will strike out some, and it's an offense that I worry way less about a right-hander than a lefty against them. It's just the ballpark. I don't worry that much at this point about a home start against Toronto, but I would be very hesitant to start anybody I wasn't really sure about going into Toronto.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if I wanted to go 15-team leagues, I can make a case for Nolasco. I mean, he hasn't been good this year, but he hasn't been terrible. And, you know, he goes out to L.A. to take on the Angels. To me, that's not a really scary matchup. And then he faces the Yankees. And to me, that's also not a really scary matchup. So I think Nolasco's another guy who, you know, probably throws 12 innings next week. And, you know, his ratios are probably not helpful, but not that terrible if you feel like you could get maybe 10 strikeouts out of him.
Matchup-wise, he and Weaver are the two best. I just don't trust either of those pitchers. So.
Yeah, I definitely don't trust Weaver.
All right, that is the Fantasy 411. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Brett. Thank you for taking some time to talk.
Yeah, thank you.